Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening. My name is Stephen Lewis, and you're listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Amber Jayanti will join us to talk about the Timeless Tarot. But before we're going to get started on that, join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Please explain to all of us what you do over at PsychicAccess.com.
Absolutely. I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer. So I, on the one hand, connect with people in spirit to provide evidence of the continued existence of the soul. And I use the hermetic astrology for helping people understand themselves, helping people to understand themselves, I should say, and also to look at when events will occur in life or when they're most likely to occur.
Ah, interesting. Self-discovery, prediction, all of that is your purview. Piercing the veils between worlds, all of that is your area. Wonderful. Well, we appreciate you being here with us tonight, Steve.
Thank you.
Carmen, how are you doing?
Hey, hi, I'm okay, thanks.
I'm very glad to hear that. Tell us what you do over at Psychic Access.
Oh, I'm just one of your lowly empaths.
There's nothing lowly about that. It's a special skill.
It sure is. And I do limit it to the present, here and now, and I'm a card reader. But I do enjoy the psychology of interpersonal relationships and the potential that you can create in your life with that. And I think that that is a point from which you branch out to continue all of your outcomes or all of your to maximize your future. So I think it starts with relationships, right?
Oh yeah, definitely it does. I tend to think that's the foundation of a lot of different success, even career success, you know. So it cannot be underestimated. Well, we're definitely glad that you could be with us tonight, Carmen. Hope you enjoy the show tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'd like to, before we bring Amber on, I'd like to just say a few words about Amber Jayanti. She's an author. First of all, she wrote Tarot for Dummies for the from the popular Dummy for Dummies franchise, and she is also a Kabbalist as well. And tonight we're going to talk about how to blend Kabbalah into tarot in order to get a better result from your own personal tarot reader. You can find her over at www.practicalmystic.com, and I believe we have her. Hello, Amber. How are you?
Ah, excellent. Thank you. Delighted to be here with you simultaneously on the West Coast and East Coast at the same time. And my website has got a dash. It's practical-mystic.com.
Forgive me. That's exactly right.
You are forgiven.
a small detail, but very important. And of course, there
it's
aren't too
many.
It's
very important. Yes.
There aren't too many Amber Jayantis in the world. So if anybody goes to Google and plugs Amber Jayanti into Google, you're guaranteed to come across her site. And it's
maybe.
Well,
there's a pause.
Definitely well worth the visit. Well, let's go ahead and get started. We've got a lot of material to cover here tonight. Both of these topics, Kabbalah and Tarot, are sprawling, huge topics. So let's just start with...
And I'm just delighted to be here with you, Stephen. So thank you so much for the invite.
I'm overjoyed to have you here as well. Very excited about the show. These are two topics that are near and dear to my heart. I'm very curious, Amber, how would you define Kabbalah?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the dictionary categorizes Kabbalah as a noun, but 21st century practitioners also classify Kabbalah as a verb, you know, the part of speech, you know, that indicates action.
Yeah.
And for me, this beautifully corresponds to the translation of the word Kabbalah from Hebrew to receive, and from mouth to ear. And my yoga background leads me to liken the word Kabbalah to the Sanskrit word Shruti, meaning the inner perception or hearing of divine revelations, and suggesting that Kabbalah is actively sent to and received by those who are open to receiving its teachings, to those who have the ears to hear, and it's, you know, then passed on to others who also have the ears to hear. So for me, the shift from a noun to a verb, you know, intimates that Kabbalah isn't dead volumes of scriptures. It's alive. It's vibrant, you know. And for me, Kabbalah is a living and growing system, you know, of wisdom teachings and practices that I have, you know, learned to identify as ageless wisdom.
Well, one thing that's confused me about Kabbalah is how to spell it. I've seen so many variations in spelling. Can you explain what the differences are between
these? Oh, I'll do my best, Stephen. You know, when it's spelled with the letter K, Kabbalah is really only one label of very many used during a period of over 2,000 years to designate the mystical Jewish movement, its teachings and its practices. And the two major works of the, and these are, you know, considered to be Hebrew Kabbalah when it's spelled with a K, are the Sefer Yetzirah, and Sefer means book, the book of creation or formation, and the Sefer Zohar, the book of splendor. And what else can I tell you here? Yes, the Sefer Yetzirah was written in Arabic, and it was found in Egypt somewhere between 600 to 800 A.D., and it was really once thought to have been written by the ancient Jewish patriarch Abraham. But its true author, you know, remains a mystery. The Zohar, or the Book of Splendor, was written by Rabbi Moses de Leon in the mid to late 12th century, and it was once purported, interestingly, to have been a collection of writings of one of the very, very, very earliest, and perhaps the first known Kabbalist named Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai from about 150 A.D. And there is also one other piece to this, you know, one other work which I consider to be especially significant, and it's called the Book of Brightness, or the Sefer HaBahir, and of unknown origin, and it surfaced in southern France in the late 12th century, and although it is generally considered by the Hebrew Kabbalists to be unimportant, to me it is the first known written reference and mention to a sacred tree, and a work that describes the 10 spheres of the Tree of Life as vessels of divine light. So I guess here it's essential to say that the Hebrew Kabbalah is not strictly kosher. I hope to get a laugh on that. It was influenced by the Mu'tazila, the rationalist school that emerged in Persia around the 8th to the 10th century, and also the Gnostic heresies.
Interesting. So there's a distinction between Hebraic or Jewish Kabbalah and other types of mystical Kabbalah practices. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yeah, and the Hebrew is spelt with a K, and I'll give you a little bit on the C. Would you like a little on the C?
Yes, let's hear about the C.
when Kabbalah is spelt with C, it's used when discussing the spread of the Jewish mystical tradition, or the Kabbalah with a K, even though it has Sufi influence and Gnostic influence in it. So the spread of Jewish mystical tradition and its symbols into mystical Christian circles and again, this movement originated in southern France and Spain in the 12th and 13th century, and continued into the mid-15th century. Its mid-Renaissance roots are very closely tied to the Neoplatonic leanings of the Medicean Academy in Florence. And, you know, we do know that the Renaissance marked an end to the Age of Faith and ushered in the Age of Reason, and with it a decline in religiosity. and a few cutting-edge thinkers thought that a viable way of reviving Catholicism was to combine Christianity with Judaism. And while, you know, this idea really, brought numerous prominent religious scholars and philosophical figures into the midst, you know, the idea was greatly ahead of its time and failed quite miserably. The head of the Medicean Academy, Pico della Mirandola, in his 900 conclusions, gave 900 reasons why magic and Kabbalah are the best proofs of Christ's divinity. So interesting. The Pope, which I believe was Leo X, quashed Pico's project. But Pico, most interestingly, stood his ground and didn't recant the conclusions, although he was under a lot of pressure. So because Kabbalistic works explore the relationship between the universe and creation, the term Kabbalah, with a C, came to refer to Neoplatonic, Orphic, Neopythagorean Gnostic wisdom in the general sense rather than specific Jewish doctrines as expounded in the Hebrew texts. And akin to the early Jewish Kabbalists, Kabbalah with a C was one of the numerous titles that the founders and the early masters of the school gave to their secret law. And it was only later that Kabbalah with a C became the most commonly used designation for this particular mystery school.
Interesting. We can also spell it with a Q, though. What's up with that?
Well, what's up with that is that's a mid-19th century spelling assigned by some individuals who knowingly combined the esoteric works of Kabbalah with a K and Kabbalah with a C with the magical components, the hermetic arts and sciences, tarot, astrology, numerology, sacred geometry. And Kabbalah with a Q, however, also includes teachings from the ancient mystery schools, the Hellenistic, Pythagorean, etc., Platonic mystery schools, as well as from the more contemporary Rosicrucian, Masonic, Theosophical, and Golden Dawn orders. And I guess my many years of working with students from various backgrounds, plus my own familiarity with esoteric Hindu yoga and Advaita Vedanta, Buddhist, Sufi, pagan, and shamanic traditions and practices prompted me to use this spelling and to further expand its meaning. So for me, Kabbalah, when it's spelled with a Q, refers to universal Kabbalah. And universal Kabbalah is a non-sexist, non-racist, non-homophobic, pan or non-denominational system of ageless wisdom and teachings and practices that's really not limited to any particular religious form. It is really all-inclusive. And this approach may be regarded as, what, eclecticism. It's very eclectic, the combining of different, often seemingly contradictory beliefs, schools of thought, you know, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, and Hinduism, and so on. Essentially, Kabbalah's teachings, for me, reconcile and really build a powerful alignment and an alliance between the differing traditions by acknowledging their commonalities. And really, in my estimation, universal Kabbalah actually bridges the inner traditions of East and West, because it really, you know, again, emphasizes the principles that they share, and in this way serves as a potent, peacemaker between seemingly dissenting beliefs.
Very interesting. And it's this form of Kabbalah that interests us tonight, how the Kabbalah touches upon the tarot specifically. But before we get into tarot practice, let's talk a little bit about the Tetragrammaton. Can you talk a little bit about that for us, please?
Well, all right. Tetra is four, and gramma is letters. So we have the Tetragrammaton, which is a word, which is actually the Hebrew letters Yod, He, Vav, He, four letters composed only of consonants, and because it lacks vowels, it's deemed unpronounceable, or better yet, I'd rather say unspeakable. And it makes the tetragrammaton, for me, this makes the tetragrammaton analogous with the words, "And God said as only God was to say it," deeming it, you know, to be the vibration of creation, the word of the Most High that initiated creation. And what I really want to mention here is that the tetragrammaton is the foundation for the four tarot suits, as each of its letters represent one of the four elements of creation, the fire, the water, the air, and the earth. And a little bit more about that later. But forbidding the articulation of the tetragrammaton occurred in about 200 to 300 BC, and it was done really both out of respect for this holy name and to refrain from giving the ordinary person this holy power, Old story. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be the idea, that if you can pronounce someone's name, you have a power over them. You know, in the times of Jesus, for example, there were a lot of miracle workers who were accused of being charlatans because they were manipulating the tetragrammaton somehow. Am I right about that, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, I would say yes. You know, there are some real interesting legends around it, which I'll go into in a second, but what I'd like to do is actually pronounce the tetragrammaton.
Actually, should I be worried here, Amber?
Let's Is anything chant bad gonna happen it, actually. To me? Oh, I can chant it. I mean, let's see if I can. So the tetragrammaton also, you know, interpreted as Yahweh or Yod-Heh, Yod-Heh or Jehovah, can be pronounced or enunciated or chanted this way.
And that is vibrating the name, correct?
You got it.
It's very important to do it that way, because when you vibrate the name, that's when you sort of tap into its power.
You are right. You are so right. And again, it's that vibration of creation, as we were just talking about a couple of minutes ago. It's very interesting that legend states that on the Jewish New Year, the high priest or the chief rabbi goes into the heart of the temple and pronounces the tetragrammaton, and by doing so, recreates the world for another year. And also, contemporarily, the unspeakable tetragrammaton has morphed into the holy word Adonai, which means master of the universe, which is only spoken or chanted during religious ceremonies, and is likewise substituted by the word Hashem, an indirect reference to the name. It's never directly spoken, you know, or said, Adonai, unless it is in the context of a religious ceremony. And we all know, I guess maybe we all know, that the tetragrammaton is the name that Moses was given at the burning bush on Sinai, you know, asking, finish the story.
Oh, you're exactly right. God, Moses wants to know quite reasonably who he's speaking with, right? Who this entity is. And so he's brazen enough to ask the creator of the universe what its name is. And, right? Am I right? And this creator says, "I am what I am."
I am what I am. I am all that was, is, and will always be, really.
simple words, but very, very profound, no?
Yeah, I would say all that which was, is, and will always be. Mm-hmm.
So Kabbalah, there are a couple of terms. This is all in the way of background here. There are a couple of terms in Kabbalah, the macroprosopos, I think, and then the micropros. The gist here is that Kabbalah concerns itself with life on a grand scale, but also life on a microscopic scale, too.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kabbalists like myself really embrace the law of synchronicity, parented by the science of subatomic particle physics and quantum mechanics, the theory of relativity, the law of synchronicity that says all events and things are tied together in an unbroken wholeness, suggesting that life is not really a series of random events. It's an expression of a deeper order, which is sometimes called one world or unus mundus. You know, and I guess most simply, you know, there is a unifying underlying reality that everything emerges from and returns to, you know. And this idea really shifts my egocentric thinking, both consciously and unconsciously, you know, to this greater wholeness, this universal view of the life process, you know, that regards all phenomena as interwoven, you know, microcosm, macrocosm. You know, my mentor Joseph Nolan used to succinctly stated, what did he say? Joseph said, Kabbalah is a system that affirms the universal structure of all life in its myriad forms, from the largest universe to the smallest, to the atom, and is a revolving system of satellites around a center. And furthermore, fractal geometries, repetitive patterns provide a scientific framework for this ages-old principle, you know, the Hermetic dictum, what? As above, so below, as below, so above. You know, what is it? The Masoretic version of Genesis, you know, says, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So I guess there it is, you know.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, you regard the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the Tarot to be the basis of a mystery school tradition. Would you mind elaborating on that, please?
Well, I guess as I am continuing to learn and experience, you know, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and Tarot and its pathways are the foundation of said ancient mystery school tradition. Mysteries ask for solutions, and the Kabbalistic Mystery School offers clues to help solve the mysteries, what mystifies and puzzles and confounds us about life and death. And I guess all life situations may be perceived as a set of pictures. And the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and Tarot are picture symbols that represent universal and natural laws, truths, and principles. And in the Kabbalistic Mystery School tradition, the tarot cards are called keys. And these unique keys unlock doors, helping the key holder or card holder, the card holder, I love it, better perceive the greater mystery or reality embedded, encoded within daily living. You know, these keys have assisted many to find and to follow their spiritual path. And, you know, aligned with the true mystery school tradition, the study of Kabbalah is not about searching for the way or adopting another's way. It's really about finding and following one's own way through life to the heart of the universe and one's soul, spirit, self. And in that sense, the mystery, the Kabbalistic Mystery School, is really a pathless path that does not tell students what to do. You know, it offers these pictorial guidelines or clues rather than exact formulas, you know, and these clues are given to, you know, for us to better our lives and our outlook and the world around us. And I guess, of course, these guidelines are something that only the spiritual aspirant knows if and when and how he or she, you know, are ready to bring them into their life.
Now, these keys you're talking about, these pictorial guides, you're referring to the major arcana of the tarot.
That's right, I am.
So everybody listen up now. In your tarot decks at home, in your major the major arcana, the pictorial cards, these are actually keys. And everything we're talking about here is the process. These can be measured, perhaps, or shown by the tarot cards. Correct, Amber?
Well, through study and intuition, certainly one starts to discover the meaning of those cards. And, you know, we have these life situations, Stephen. And the art of this and the science of this is, for me, learning how to look at these mundane situations and to be able to, you know, if I pick a card, you know, that I'm looking for, you know, to get some guidance, some inspiration, regard to the situation, to overlay these, you know, these universal principles, you know, to be able to key into what the card holds so I can better understand this mundane situation, or, you know, what I call it transforming the mundane into the mystical by using these cards to elevate or expand my perception or a student's perception.
Okay. Well, in order to begin using Kabbalah effectively with the tarot deck, one probably needs to understand a little bit about the Tree of Life. Now, what is that?
Well, Tree of Life, you know what I would like to do? I'd like to take a moment or a couple of moments here and give you an encapsulation and personalization of the Tree of Life that was passed on to me by my teacher, Paul Foster Case, through Builders of the Adytum, which I have very, very slightly adjusted over the years. And, you know, it really, again, is an encapsulation and personalization of the 10 basic principles linked to the 10 spheres of Sephira on the tree from which, you know, the Kabbalistic Tarot originates. So do we have a couple of minutes to do this?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
Okay. So it begins with these very simple words, and when I hold my classes, my students, we say these together. This is the truth about the self. All the power that ever was or will be is here now. And then there are 10 statements, and each one goes with a sphere on the Tree of Life, beginning with the sphere of the crown or Keter. Number one, the crown, Keter, I am a center of expression for the one divine will to express itself, which eternally creates, sustains, and transforms the universe. And then we go to wisdom, or Chokmah. Through me, its unfailing wisdom takes form in thought and word. And now to wisdom, and now to understanding, Binah, filled with understanding of its perfect law, I am guided moment by moment along the path of liberation. And then we go to mercy, Chesed. From the exhaustless riches of its limitless substance, I draw all things needful, both spiritual and material. And then, of course, that's balanced with number five, severity, Gubura. I recognize the manifestation of the undeviating justice in all the circumstances of my life, and parenthetically, whether I like it or not. And then we have six, which is beauty and Tiferet in all things great and small. I behold the beauty of the divine expression. Seven, which goes with victory, Netzach, living from that will, supported by its unfailing wisdom and understanding from above, the Sephira above. Mine is the victorious life. And we go to eight, which is Hod and splendor. I look forward with confidence to the perfect realization of the eternal splendor of the limitless light. And I know that some of these are not initially comprehensible, but over time they become increasingly comprehensible. Number nine, Yesod, foundation in thought and word and deed. I rest my life from day to day upon the sure foundation of eternal being. And number 10, we have kingdom, Malkut. The royalty of spirit is embodied in all flesh. The royalty of spirit is embodied in my flesh. So that's a little encapsulation.
What I'd like to point out to the listeners is that there are 10 of these, and just like there are 10 pip cards, there are 10, and these are the sephirot that you're explaining here, right, Amber?
Which naturally are connected to the pip cards. So these 10 statements can naturally be applied to the minor arcana, to all the aces and the twos and the threes and the fours and so on.
Beautiful. So all that's left to do now is to filter these statements, these ideas, through the four elements or the suits, correct, depending on what card we're talking about.
Yes, and I'd like to just give you a little bit more on the tree. Is that okay?
Oh, please, please, by all means.
So the Tree of Life is a cosmic computer.
Whoa, that's a heavy question.
The Tree of Life, like its pictorial representation and extension, the tarot cards, is a filing system and for enormous amounts of information which through time and training can be accessed and inputted.
So in other words, this is like a big, huge cosmic Google.
Google, you say?
Google, yes. Google, some sort of a search engine, some sort of engine where I can find some clarity on that. On things,
yes, of course, of course. The tree of life really isn't it. Go ahead, Stephen, I'm sorry.
Oh no! I was just sort of that sort of flabbergasted me because I've never heard such an apt analogy. It's flabbergasting.
Isn't it lovely? I love it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there it is. It just nails it. At least, the tree of life is a map of the involution from the top to the bottom and evolution from the bottom of top to the top of consciousness. While we live in the physical world and body, and as such, depicts the building blocks for all of creation. In other words, this glyph, this tree of life, is a mathematical and diagrammatic history of the evolution of life and human consciousness. It's a graphic presentation to the human mind of the interactions that occur between universal and personal consciousness. And in response to this, it is of the utmost importance to remember that what is perceived is always a reflection of the level of awareness of the perceiver. Thus, you know, I can contemplate the tree of life today, and I will see it one way, while at another point in time, because my awareness has developed, you know, I may see it quite differently. So from this perspective, the tree is simply a mirror of one's breath of awareness. Dionne Fortune, in her book, The Mystical Kabbalah, said of the tree, she said, the tree is to the universal mind what the dream is to the individual ego. A symbol arising from the subconscious indicating what is hidden. And I tend to liken the tree to a cosmic Christmas tree, where a place for every possible kind of experience and awareness exists, and where on the life process is its ornaments. You know, the tree is a living and breathing entity. It is a constantly transforming reality that may be understood to represent both a personal and cosmic experience of life. And in other words, the tree might be viewed as a living reality and as living reality.
Yes. Now, one thing I'd like to point out to people is that as we're going from the Sephirot, Keter, down to Malkut, in other words, as we're going from the Ace to the number 10, we're talking
right.
about increasing levels of concreteness, increasing levels of reality, correct?
Yes, the thickening of matter.
The thickening. Let's hold that thought, please, Amber. We got to take a 1 minute commercial break here.
Go.
We're gonna come back in exactly 1 minute. Just to remind everybody, they can find Amber at www.practical-mystic.com, and there you can order her books, you can enroll in her lovely classes, which are extremely informative and helpful, and you can pick up other products. And with that, we will be right back in 1 minute.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing, and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Welcome back to Psychic Viewpoint, and tonight we do have with us Amber Jayanti, Kabbalist and Tarotist and author and teacher. She's so many things. But right now, what she is more than anything else is fascinating and enlightening. I'm really enjoying this interview, Amber. We appreciate you being here tonight. So
Thank
we
you,
talked
I'm
about the Sephirot on the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And how these relate to the tarot deck, to the small numbered cards of the tarot. Yeah. Let's pretend that we're actually doing a tarot spread, for example, and we get some of these numbered cards. We're not really talking about the major arcanum cards. But we get some of the smaller pip cards. What does this make you think when you see these smaller cards? And you know, how do you go about attaching them to the Tree of Life or?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is talk about. Yeah, you know. Okay. A lot of study.
Yeah,
a lot of study and a lot of
topic.
Intuition. You know, I mean, this is a lifetime work for me. And, you know, one has to really love the work to really, in my estimation, to really, really work with it very, very fully and very effectively. And I guess what I want to say is the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and each Sephira on it is an encyclopedia of information, you know, that can be factored into and expand the meaning of each tarot card, and hence the tarot reading or consultation. And in my experience, working with the tarot necessitates both an intellectual and intuitive foundation from which to perceive the cards, and in this way to make the work more full-bodied and therefore more effective. So each Sephira, each of the 10 spheres on the Tree of Life, has a set of attributes, physical objects and correspondences, intellectual concepts with distinctive characteristics which help to flesh out each Sephira. And these include such as colors and gems and scents and plants and flowers and animals and medicines, and they're also paired with spiritual experiences and Kabbalistic intelligences or powers and vices and virtues. For example, the sixth Sephira, the heart of the Tree of Life and human heart, defined by the statement on the pattern on the trestle board, and all things great and small, I perceive the beauty, and one of my mentors used to say, and the humor of the divine expression, is linked with the four sixes, plus the sixth major arcana card. We can't forget that, the lovers, it's very much in there. And the Hebrew name of the lovers is Zayin, which means sword. And there are also these attributes that go along with it that get factored into the pip cards. The number six, the color yellow, the jewel, which is topaz, and the yellow diamond, the frankincense, the acacia tree, the oak tree, the gourds tree, the sunflower, the phoenix, the lion, the spider, and the drug of alcohol, which I think is so appropriate, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, or the medicine. I mean, really, alcohol is a medicine, you know, of course, in taken as a sacrament.
So these are all paradisiacal things associated with the Sephira of Tiferet.
Yes. And this is what I'm talking, and I'm saying these are the things that get factored in when one learns the Sephira. One then takes that information and integrates it into the minor cards. I mean, I teach the minor cards for 35 weeks when I teach the minor cards, because they've already had the Tree of Life and now they're ready to take, you know, one and integrate it into the next. You know, there's also, what else can I say? There's also the spiritual experience, the vision of harmony of all things. You know, and when you look at those sixes, can you see the vision of harmony of all things in those sixes? You can. And it's linked to the sacrament of marriage. Can you see the marriage going on? Maybe not the marriage of man and woman, but oneself with oneself, you know, the Hyrios Gamos. And there are also numerous alternative titles. You know, calling a Sephira by another name, you know, really adds so much dimension to it, or calling those minor arcana cards by, you know, you can call them beauty, but you can also call them things like, well, we're looking at Tiferet, we can call it the comforter, the redeemer, the deliverer, we can call it harmony, we can call it the ruler, we can call it the holy son and daughter. I mean, and there's also a slew of mythological correlations that can bring up all kinds of associations. And I know that there are mythological decks that do that. And I am talking about, you know, bringing all this information in and, you know, having it in your computer bank, having it in your memory bank. So when you work, you know, when you do a spread and you lay out the cards, having that information there, that intellectual information, and then using your intuition to to know what to call up, to know what to bring to the fore, to know what to say, to know what to elicit to bring out of the cards.
That's vital, isn't it? Because what we're talking about is hundreds, if not more than that.
Thousands.
Yeah, for one, and we're just talking about one particular, or maybe four cards here. Because, you know, so let's say that I come to consult with you, and I get this Six of Cups, for example. Now we're talking about Tefaret through the prism of water. You see. And so this is how it's done, those of you who are listening and are paying attention in chat. What you want to do is to marry the card to the actual Sephira and then apply the element. Does that sound about right, Amber?
Mm-hmm. The element, and then there are all these other, there's also the virtue and the vice. So going along with the virtue and the vice of that Six of Cups, we have devotion, which is beautifully, expressed there. And there's also the vice of pride, which can be also seen there.
So there's a shadow side, even to the better.
Yes, of course.
And I say better in quotation marks, because none of them are qualitatively good or bad. Tefaret
absolutely
is useful, just like Gebura is useful, even though we would much rather probably embrace Tefaret and avoid the severity of Gebura.
Well, I love Gebura.
You do. Now, for those listening, we're talking specifically about the number five, the Five of Cups, the Five of Wands.
Yeah, and five is really, you know, if we look just even simply to the Hierophant, you know, the Hierophant is the bringer of truth. And Gebura, you know, is the bringer of truth with love as the motivating agent behind it. When the love is gone, you know, it's not Gebura. It's something completely different.
Right.
But true Gebura is motivated by love, is motivated by great compassion. You know, people who are fearful of Gebura, you know, are not fully aware of that aspect of Gebura.
Yes, because its severity can, in fact, be liberating in the long run, can it?
Oh,
it can be very instructive.
Or immediately.
Yeah.
It brings down. If you look back directly above Gebura, you have the Great Mother, you have understanding that's flowing right in there. You know, so she's coming from a place of understanding. I mean, Gebura comes from a place of great understanding. You know, and it is bringing, you know, the Great Mother has got a shadow side. That has to be, you know, every mother has to have that, you know, restrictive side to her. And that goes, falls right into Gebura.
Severity, you know, the ability with love.
To not just always be permissive, but to be,
Severity with love.
Or tough love. Yes.
The tough love, yeah, absolutely.
The tough love, baby, the tough love.
We all need it sometimes. Now, we've talked about the Sephirot, and Sephirot is plural of Sephira. This is a Hebrew word we're talking about here.
Yes.
We've talked about the Sephirot and how they correlate to the small numbered cards. And this is pretty much independent of any kind of a deck. You can use this probably with a regular deck of playing cards. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter if you use the Rider-Waite deck, the Thoth deck, the Hermet. It doesn't matter. This is applicable to any deck. But now the Sephirot are connected to by pathways, and these correspond to the Major Arcanum, right? What can you tell us about those pathways? This has been something that sort of confused me.
All right. I'll talk a little bit about the Sephira, and then I'll talk about the pathways, because we need both. The primary difference between a Sephira and a path is that each sphere or Sephira represents a step in the overall or in the general involutionary process, the condensing or thickening of matter from the plane of spirit on the tree of life at the top to the physical plane on the tree's bottom. Conversely, each sphere or Sephira also represents a step in the general evolutionary process, the decondensing or thinning of matter when proceeding from the tree's bottom on the physical plane to the spiritual plane on the tree's top. I regard the tarot cards originally to be Hebrew letters. So these tarot cards on the tree's pathways running between the connecting spheres to be the personal experiences one has when moving to and from one Sephira or one to and from one particular facet of awareness and another.
Very interesting.
Yes, to be the personal experiences one has while moving to and from one Sephira or particular facet of awareness and learning to another. That's what the tarot cards signify to me, these pathways. The pathways, I don't mean to be redundant, signify a set of universal and natural laws and principles which assist spiritual progression. The cards are not necessarily assimilated in a particular order. Understanding comes as it does. Yet the assimilation or learning of one sephira does, especially in the instance of the paired spheres, lead to the other.
Ah, so in that sense, the pathways are transitory in nature, transitioning,
yes.
Am I understanding?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
There are also balance points between the sephira, much as the three branches of government, the executive, legislator, and judicial government branches, check and balance one another, check and balance out one another. Each path and the wisdom teachings revealed by keying into the tarot card or Hebrew letter thereon has the potential to offset and equalize extreme behavior, thereby maintaining and restoring equilibrium within it, us, and on the tree itself. So essentially, when focused on one of the paired sephira, such as mercy and severity, wisdom and understanding, we are bound to become aware of its opposite complement. Neglecting to recognize this brings imbalance and a very wide range of experiences, which, sometimes have brought me kicking and screaming to the other sephira.
Ah, would you say then that the major arcana cards, the keys, would they sort of show us a way to restore equilibrium into our lives?
Yes,
especially
on the tree. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, definitely how to restore equilibrium in one's life, and on the tree it is showing how to balance the pairs of opposites, or the two sephira that it connects, how to bring harmony between mercy and severity, how to work with victory and splendor, or the mind and the emotions. And you have the tower card that runs that path there, which suggests, too much emotion, we have, things fall apart. Too much intellect, things fall apart as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the pathways check and balance, the sephira, and help to restore the balance. Yeah.
Some cards seem to be innately contradictory to the sephirot. For example, the seven in the earth element, the seven of coins, or the seven of discs, or the seven of pentacles, however you want to call it. It's very earthy, so if we stick it into an intellectual or a mental type of sephira, like Chod, like number sephira number 8, or sephira even number 7, Netzach. Sometimes
The sevens go with Netzach. Go ahead, please keep going. I'm sorry.
Well, the earth element, we should have mentioned this. The tree of life is actually divided into four parts pertaining to element, right? Asiya, right?
Go along with the tetragrammaton.
Ah, so they correspond to the four letters in the whole.
That's right.
Holy
the elements each correspond to a letter on the tetragrammaton. The yods are the wands, and the hay. The second letter is the cups, and the vav is the swords, the air element, and the final hay is the pentacles. And I could give you a little bit more about that. Yes. No. Maybe.
This is very heady stuff. It's all very, very, very...
The four Kabbalistic worlds, which are really... We're working with these four worlds all the time. So you were saying, if something seems to fall into a contradictory... Say what you were saying again, please, Stephen.
Well it seems to me, for example, that some... In some elements, for example, the earth element, earth cards, pentacles, for example, it might not fit so well in that part of the tree of life that's designated for air, the airy part of the tree of life. Do you see what I'm driving at?
Well, or it may suggest that one needs to lighten up.
Too serious. Too serious.
Preponderance of certain numbers or certain elements. I mean, all the signs of the zodiac. I look at you know, if there is a preponderance of numbers or elements, I look at the quality that they are pointing at developing, you know, the quality or qualities that they're pointing at developing, rather than, you know, any kind of a prediction seasonally or planetarily or anything like that. That's my tendency. I know that sometimes people like to see, oh, sevens, maybe 7 weeks, 7 months, you know, whatever. But I think, you know, that we must look at, you know, the underlying principles, you know, of the cards that are there. You know, what is that? What are the principles that are coming to the fore there? What are they trying to point out? You know, why do I have so many sevens? You know, yeah. am I learning about, you know, my emotionality and, you know, perhaps how to take my emotions and channel them and bring them into some kind of a physical a form, you know, if there's a lot of earth there, some type of a physical manifestation, take my creativity and bring it, you know, channel it into a physical form.
Mm. Oh, my. That's just really fascinating. And it never fails to amaze me how pertinent the tarot is for anybody's specific situation. And it's a lot of it is thanks to this tree of life and these Kabbalistic principles that underlie the tarot. And in fact, the Kabbalah, for a lot of occultists, they believe that the Kabbalah is the source of the tarot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do. That they were originally the tree of life, were just, it was the sephira, and then there were Hebrew letters on the paths, which legend says, and you know, that people meditated on the Hebrew letters, and out of the Hebrew letters came these images. And it makes perfect sense, because the ancient Hebrew Kabbalists would take a Hebrew letter and they would repeatedly write that letter out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And by writing out that letter and repeating the letter, the meaning of the letter would become revealed to them. So it's only one step away that, for me, that an image would also come from that letter.
Ah. Interesting. Now, Amber, you've been doing this for quite some time, haven't you? How long have you been studying the tarot and dealing with the tarot and Kabbalah?
Well, it's been a while that it's been working with me. I think it picked me. I'm a bit over 40 years.
So you definitely know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm in the process of... thank you. And I'm certainly in process, Stephen. I'm certainly in process. There's so much to learn, and the most important aspect of it is not just learning it, it's living it. You know?
Well, how has this affected your, how has it influenced your life?
Well, you know, Buddhism speaks of Nihayana, spiritual practice, when it's about my own well-being and enlightenment, and Mahayana, when it's spiritual practice is about the well-being and enlightenment of all. And, you know, for years, my Kabbalistic studies and path and practice were all about me and mine. Yeah. And over time, it started to shift. And, you know, the Hebrew Kabbalists speak of Tikkun Olam, the repair and the healing of the world, and the Dalai Lama and the Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel, among others, teach, in the face of suffering, one has no right to turn away and not to see. So for me, being spiritual has become synonymous with having a social and political conscience. Yet like the Sphinx, you know, on the Wheel of Fortune card, to act wholeheartedly, yet without undue attachment to what results. And this includes relinquishing my aversion to canvassing a neighborhood in a voting district different from mine to help remove a corrupt politician from office, or getting on a bus or a plane when it has the potential to relieve suffering and help build a critical mass for a better world. So, yeah, you know, it's been very instrumental in renewing my my willingness and my desire to do whatever I can to input the critical mass and make the world a better place for everybody. And
I think that's lovely.
In time, I think it does that. You know, it's just an evolutionary process.
Well, Amber, I wish we had another hour to talk about these things. Unfortunately, our time has run out too soon.
We've had so much fun.
Oh, Amber, well, I have enjoyed this interview. I cannot thank you enough for joining us tonight. I'd like to remind everybody at home that Amber Jayanti is the proprietress of the Santa Cruz School for Tarot and Kabbalah Study, founded in 1975. Mm-hmm. Been around for a while. She's the author of Tarot for Dummies, along with other illuminating works. She has a wonderful course on the tarot that I highly recommend, and every one of you should go visit her at www.practical-mystic.com. She also does tarot consultations too, be in person or via distance through Skype. So by all means, visit her website and check Amber Jayanti out. Miss Jayanti, thank you again so much for coming and being with us tonight.
Thank you. My pleasure. Truly my pleasure, Stephen. Thank you so much for inviting me and everybody else in the studio. Thank you. And all of you out there who might be listening. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, so lovely. Peace. Have a lovely night. We'll talk later, Amber. Bye.
Thank you, darling. Hello.
All right. That was a lovely interview with the great Amber Jayanti. We thank her for that. I would like to take a couple of moments now to make a couple of announcements. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper handy. If you were unable to catch the last week's show, you'll find it in the recorded archive link as well as the archives of all the previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the archives tab. Circulate that archive link. Circulate the future show details to your friends and your family. What we want to do is to connect with as many of you as possible, so share that link with others, please. Also, do not forget to visit our psychicbloggers.com site to learn about everything from the paranormal. You're going to learn about reincarnation, relationships, the how-tos of psychic development. What we're talking about here is an encyclopedia of paranormal and metaphysical educational resources. Psychicbloggers.com, check it out. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com. You're going to find the best verified, accuracy-tested psychics, each one with his or her own unique gift. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about her or him and to choose from the list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug in Psychic Access because of the stringent, high expectations required of each and every psychic. All of my co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. If you want a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. By the way, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, invite your friends. Join us in the chat room. Listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone. So spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Well, Carmen, what did you think about the interview tonight?
Absolutely fascinating.
You liked it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's an absolute pleasure to meet an author for the for Dummies series, but also just to hear how in-depth, what in-depth knowledge this type of writer has. And, you know, it brought up a book that I was reading a few years ago. It was a really great one. It was called God is a Verb. And it was by a rabbi, David A. Cooper. And what I thought was so enlightening, it was just such a beautiful, beautiful treatise on the magic of numbers or the interconnectivity and the logic of life. And if I may, can I just quickly point something out here? Because I just
Absolutely.
Thought this is such a redeeming message. You know, for those of us that think that there's no possibility of ever meeting compatible partners in our life, what is says here is the original soul is described as having 613 limbs. And I guess one could take that into the analogy of the tree of life. And these represent 613 specific missions that Adam and Eve had to accomplish to bring about the rectification of the creation. So it's like Adam and Eve were like operatives, right? Each
secret agents.
Yeah. Each limb was itself a root which contained 600,000 smaller roots. And when we multiply the 613 limbs with each having 600,000 smaller roots, we derive that there are more than 3.5 billion soul roots in total that we can connect with.
Wow.
And I mean, that You know, and that makes me think, okay, that's minimum in the universe. So what it really they do say is that, you know, in order to, and I would imagine that the logic of the Sephiroth and all that is that, you know, once you have attained a level, you have so many different routes or different branches from which to perhaps meet one of those 3.5 billion soul routes that you could connect with. I mean, it's just not a very lonely place when you think of it that way, because I think that in a way, don't we think of, it's interesting that we would think of Adam and Eve as being, you know, a duality, man and woman, and only two souls, but they have 613 roots, which make them compatible with 3.5 billion souls of us. And I think that that's a beautiful analogy as to the flexibility and the complexity of our existence and just the possibility we have, infinite fractal possibilities. It's just beautiful.
There's a lid for every pot, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think, but one of the things, it's like you were saying, a key, hey? That you have to actually look for a key. And in a sense, those can be found anywhere. And I think not even just necessarily in the Kabbalah, but in Western theosophy or you have, you know, our own symbols, our own also meta symbols, and also numerology and such, which all go back to the same roots. I mean, similar roots. Actually, I would not know how far back our numbering system really, really does go, because I believe it may. Do you know, Stephen, if it predated Arabic culture or Jewish culture? Which predated which?
Jewish religion certainly came first. Actually, Islam is much younger than Christianity, believe it or not. They were Christians and Jews living in Mecca way before there were Muslims living there.
Because when they took that, is the Islamic people took that and actually started their own schools of astronomy. And they took those teachings and they incorporated it into the most intelligent ways of being able to interpret, you know, our existence as well. So it goes on and on.
And thank God they did that too, because they also preserved a lot of Greek and Latin writings that would have been destroyed during the...
Did you? I know.
They preserved that tradition and it allowed us to sort of resurrect it. But you also use the Hermetic Tarot, and that's very, very much based on the Kabbalah. You know, so what I'm hoping is that people will be able to walk. I mean, it's a complicated subject, to be sure. I don't expect people to be able to go home and do their, be great at it right off the bat. But I'm hoping that people will be able to take something useful away from it. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is that I think most of us are intimidated by the Kabbalah. And could you explain to us, please, we have been told that you cannot really study the Torah after age 40, right? Until you're 40.
Well, they say that about the Kabbalah, but that certainly doesn't stop.
Oh, the Kabbalah, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't stop Madonna and, other celebrities from just diving right on in there.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, that's totally different from what we're talking about here. I mean, it's the same, yes, but heavily diluted.
So, I mean, if it is actually, yes, absolutely. I think it's a life study. And I would imagine that it's just fascinating, and it must be a little bit irritating to people of that culture to see us, analyzing it from a Western point of view or from another point of view. Because it's, but it doesn't seem to be that way. I think that in any sense, you can kind of interpret it a little bit into all different facets. Like in this book, it was talking about the DNA structures being composed of the four basic, structures, which is C, G, T, T, and A, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, those four basic blocks are repeated, they say, in the same way. This is what this man was writing about, as, what was it,
Grammaton. It's a tongue twister.
Yes, absolutely. And that, so in a way you can probably take that formula and intersperse it. And they were so proud and about writing about the fact that it seemed to match up with the DNA sequences, with specifically the structures and the equation. So I thought that it's just, so you can probably take it into anything, the Kabbalah, and apply it to, decorating or science or love or spirituality.
This is the important thing about those at home who like to dabble in tarot or who use it seriously or whatever, who use the tarot, you know, the numbers 1 through 10, the cards 1 through 10 of any suit, they represent, and I love how Amber put it, you know, a thickening of the energy, a thickening of the spiritual energy, you know. So anything is even as simple as, you know, hey, I want, you know, I'm in the mood for ice cream. You know what I'm saying? That starts at a very high level on the tree of life. This decision to go to the refrigerator and get some ice cream, even something as simple as that, starts at the top of the tree of life and just sort of falls down it, you know, gaining more and more mass until finally you're sitting there with the cone in your hand. You know, that's that's Kabbalah and tarot in a nutshell right there. You see, and that's what fascinates me, how the different pip cards, the smaller cards, represent various way stations on this process of a spiritual energy becoming thicker and more real. You know, it's a really, really awesome thing. Love it.
It's a great way of remembering things, actually, if you can put that structure into your life. And I'm going to try as well and relearn that.
Oh yeah, well, it's a useful shorthand, you know, it will liberate you from the keyword type of cookbook. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It'll liberate you from that sort of thing where you're looking up definitions for tarot cards, and it'll set you on that path where you can finally start making, you know, meaningful interpretations of tarot cards without having to reference a book, and that, you know, that's a big deal.
But I wonder, the one question, like, because I think that might link into nicely more that we have to talk about, would be, how does one stay sane when you get presented with all that information? You know, 613 limbs, you know, 3.5 billion, you know, outcomes.
Well, for that rabbi who is as an author, a lot of those concepts, and for most Jews, these concepts won't be new to them because there are 613 commandments, you know, so the numbers... you know, in Judaism, have a very common significance. You know, we have, in the Christian tradition, we have 10 commandments, but in the actual Old Testament, there are 613 positive and negative commandments. Do this, don't do that. And they deal to review them. Oh, yeah, they do deal over every... I mean, most of them don't apply to the modern world. They deal with things like, you know, what sorts of fabrics are permissible to mix in a garment. You know what I'm saying? I mean, no one cares about that anymore. But... unless, of course, that's, you know, you're a Jewish or like an Orthodox type of person, then I suppose it's a big deal. But, you know, a lot of the commandments are, you know, more pertinent to the time, the milieu out of which they came. So, well, I appreciate your comments. I'm curious to see what Steve had to think about all of this. Steve, what's your opinion on this, my friend?
Well, I really enjoyed the interview. I liked your guest very much. And those books, the Dummy series, they're really good. I've bought quite a few of those, and they're not for dummies at all. They go to quite advanced, but they're not necessarily starting points. Well, they do. They are books that are great when you are beginning with a new subject, I should say, actually. But they go into really quite a lot of depth and in a really structured way. So I really do like those books a lot. I think they're extremely useful. But I was interested by Carmen's comments about relationships, because my understanding is that the soul separates from the Godhead and then descends through the planes of existence to journey in order to experience what it needs to experience on its path towards the Godhead. But when it hits duality, when it descends and hits duality, it splits into two parts. Two polarized parts, and that's where the term "my other half" comes from. It's the concept that there is another half of your soul out there journeying, not necessarily on planet Earth, not necessarily on the physical plane, but the soul splits into two parts that go off and journey. And we talk about relationships and finding our soul mate, finding our other half. But I doubt that that's something that occurs in everyone's lifetime, mm-hmm. this lifetime on this plane. Because if you think of context of infinity, how long it would take for you to evolve and purify yourself such that you're ready to be back up there near the Godhead and reuniting with the other half of your soul. And I think that that's where the concept of angels comes from, because we speak of angels as being without sex. And
hermaphroditic. You wanted
hermaphroditic,
to say
it? Yeah, I almost say hermaphroditic, but it's not a word I use every day, so I wasn't quite sure. And so angels are hermaphroditic because the two polarized halves of the soul have been reunited and are working closely with the Godhead. So I find that all of that really interesting. But you know, I'm also a big fan of the tarot. I think that anybody who invests time in working with understanding the tarot will find it an indispensable tool for self-actualization, self-mastery. It's a magical, magical tool.
It constantly amazes me how powerful the tarot is. Before we keep going on that one, Steve, I would just like to take this moment to announce the call-in number. That number is 724-444-4851. You can either call in or ask your question in the chat room. We're going to take the call-ins first due to their wait time. We want you to know that each call is going to automatically be placed on hold, answered in the order received. So just relax, listen to the show while you wait. When you get on the air, we ask that you be as clear as possible, as direct as possible with your single question. We can only take one question per person, as this will allow us to take all the calls waiting for a reading. So that number again is 724-444-4851. Okay, Steve, sorry about that. I wanted to just put that number out there so we can get some call-ins coming on here.
Great.
Now, you and I use a bit of a different tarot deck. The Brotherhood of Light Egyptian Tarot doesn't really use Kabbalah so much. You know, this is something that's like it's something in a lunch line. You can pick it up and use it, or you can just ignore it if you wish. Any tarot deck you use is going to really amaze you with the results. I mean, I've gotten some really big goosebump moments. You know what I mean? Haven't you had those, Steve, where you just get these goosebumps?
Yes. You know? Yeah. And I think the tarot works on many different levels. I think there are many different levels of interpretation. You can really do a spread of cards and answer a question. A mundane question, such as when will my finances improve, or when will I move? And I say mundane because these are questions related to the world, our experiences in this world, this physical world, because the term mundane is associated with a reference to the world and the physical plane. But it's an incredibly powerful tool to use for spiritual development, because the cards will actually tell us where we need to do more work in order to grow spiritually.
Yes, they
and
will.
I do believe that the more we work with these tools, the more we purify ourselves spiritually, the more we're rewarded with awareness by spirit. I always feel that our spiritual work is like working with a good teacher. Once you master the basics, that teacher wants to stretch you further and starts to share more knowledge with you. And it has to be that way, because you can't sit with a child that hasn't learned to count and expect to teach them algebra.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you got to handle the basics, the rudiments first.
Yeah. But there's an untold amount to master, far more than we would master in one little lifetime. But the other thing that I really enjoy is to ask the cards and to look astrologically at the periods prior to a person's current lifetime. Because if you can progress astrology backwards in time, and you can progress it forward in time, far beyond the current lifetime, and you can see what would be occurring in 500 years. So you can look, for example, at Leonardo da Vinci's, or take for example a famous person that is in spirit, say a famous artist. You can look at their progress charts and transits and see when one of their paintings will sell for an incredible amount of money. It's still the information, the keys are still available and valid, even though the person is residing in spirit. So I think it's very useful to look at astrology and to use tarot to really consider things far beyond this lifetime. So where was I 500 years ago? What was I learning then? What experience did I have 200 years ago? Have I actually fully integrated the lessons of those experiences? Because they will come up again. And how can I really integrate everything I've already experienced in this lifetime and prior to this lifetime? And how can I accelerate my growth?
You raise an excellent point, because you naturally ally tarot and astrology together, and you know, C.C. Zane, who you're well aware of, in fact, you introduced me to his work. C.C. Zane referred to them as the silver and the golden key. But before we can actually really get started on that, I do believe we actually have some calls coming through the pipeline. And Steve, you happen to have a caller from South Carolina right now.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, hello, South Carolina. Who's calling? South Carolina, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. What's your name?
Elena.
Hello, Elena. How can I help?
Well, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Elena. How can I help you?
That's good. I just need to know where I stand in my relationship with my current boyfriend.
With your current boyfriend. Let's see. Let's have a look. Well, I can see that there's... I can see tension there, Elena. And I feel that I can feel that there have been disagreements, and I can feel that the situation has been difficult or unresolved for a number of months. I'm drawn to the number 10. Have things been challenging for about 10 months?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's the period of time that I'm drawn to. And I feel, Elena, that there hasn't been a clear enough approach to actually addressing the frustrations between the two of you and putting the right plans in place for you to move forward. So I feel that because of that, the situation is difficult at the moment, particularly. And I don't like to say it, but I want to say to you what I sense. And I sense that you're really at a point that's make or break, because I feel at this time that the situation is such that you're considering separation. That's what I feel. And I feel, therefore, that's what you need to actually address. So I would say to you, if you really want this relationship, if you really feel that this is the right relationship, that this can be harmonious, that this can be a relationship in which you can be both be happy and fulfilled, then the situation needs to be addressed quickly, because I feel that a separation is on the horizon, to be quite frank. Do you agree that it's got to that stage?
Yes, I can agree.
Yeah. So I guess I don't want to look out too far into the future, Elena, and tell you specifically what I feel for you and the longer term. I feel comfortable that you'll be okay. You'll be fine. You'll have a good life, and you'll be happy. But I don't want to look out and almost interfere with what's going on at the moment, because my guides are saying that you really need to just address this relationship now without thinking too much about the future, and decide together, do you want to be together, or is it better that you go your own way? But I'd give you a tool that I think is very helpful for relationships, I often, if I'm working with a client on psychic access, they're talking about a relationship, I'll often say, well, on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being wonderful, 1 being terrible, how good was this relationship when it was good? What was the best score? And how is it now? And how has it been in the last 12 months? Because I think giving a score to those questions enables you to really assess whether there's potential, because you've got to look at how good it's been and whether it could be that way again or not, or whether it's always been challenging and it's best to let go. So I hope that helps, and I hope that you are able to work through the situation and get to the best outcome together, you know, whether that's going your own directions or resolving matters. Okay?
Okay.
All right, and I wish you lots of luck.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you very much for that, Steve. We do appreciate it. Carmen, we have a caller for you from Pennsylvania.
Oh, hello. Okay, Pennsylvania. And
hello.
Hi. 3, 2, 1. How are you?
I was wondering if you see anybody coming into my life. Am I going to find my soulmate or twin flame or...
Or one of the 613 or 3.5 billion twin flames out there that we were just talking about. What is your name, please?
I'm sorry, Penny.
Okay, okay. Let's have a look here. Let's have a look at an outcome. You know the way I work. I don't know if you've worked with me before. My name is Carmen. What I do is I tend to get short-term outcomes. So I get everything up to about, you know, a good season away from here, like just in terms of the next few months. Money is actually on your frontier right now. It seems to be sort of the focus is career or directional change. So that is going to keep you somewhat suspended for a little while. It says here, one of the things is that you're waiting to hear back from, sorry, I mean, I know you want to find out about a relationship, but I'm just going to get probably the chronology leading up to that. It says here you're going to get a work offer. Are you looking for work or are you doing anything that is going to be leading you into a higher level of work?
I'm always looking. I'm always looking for something.
Okay, but you're in a fairly established job right now, because it seems to me like what comes of this is there's a period for the next couple of months where you're going to be probably just working very, very steadily on some projects. And then it does say here, and a decision will have to be made in time about a commitment with a friend. So, you know, what happens is with every reading, we go a little bit more in depth. So when we're looking at this here, this could be at any point from today's reading. Like, let's say this could be someone 5 years from now, or it could be someone 2 months from now. I'm never sure. But I would feel like this person's description is that they're divorced, unless you are, and that they've come out of a significant financial change. And he wants to look after somebody. He wants to take the resources and the experiences he's had and learn to apply them to another human being. And this is very positive. And what it does come up is with the Hierophant, which is actually the decision to marry. And I don't know how you feel about that. Some of us don't like it. Some of us find it restrictive. But that seems to be where you're heading off to. I would say that this is a fairly good outcome because it does say here you're going to be making the decision, you see. So that's great. In terms of timing, I think in a way probably you're looking at 2, 5, 7, at least 7 months from now before anything significant changes, like a really important relationship. You could be meeting people all the way up to that point, but... this is probably a more significant other. And from what I see here is that in your reading, you're very well applied. And you seem to, it does indicate here, work, study, travel, worldliness. And you should probably heed the fact that you're going to be looking for a very specific type of person that's going to suit that. So it's but again, the old tenet of, you know, you've probably established your own roots, and it's just a matter of time. And I see this burgeoning, emerging, and I wouldn't give up at all. This reading is very positive. And now, before the end of the year, before I close, because we'll go on to our next call, but I would want to say that just to give you sort of a bit of an outlook for the end of the year, you're actually going to be working with or going to see, it says here that it's talking more about family and friends. So I don't believe it is going to happen in the next 2 months, but he's almost waiting for you. This King of Cups energy is somebody that's already been formed, is already probably well situated, is ready to take his action on a relationship, and is probably wondering where you are too. Because, you know, I wonder sometimes, you know, maybe if I'm single right now, it might be good, because then in 4 years, when you're completely ready, emotionally ready, that perfect person will have been waiting for you, and you will be emotionally prepped and not destroyed, and you'll be ready to embrace that relationship. Well, this is the same thing for you. I would say try not to heed or to worry too much about the fact that it's not coming before the end of the year. It is the perfect time for you. And it does say, like, if you are looking for a career change, it does say something picks up. And that is, has to be also some very good news for you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it is. Because I'm working now, but it's not to my fullest potential, and it's not challenging. It's just sort of like a mundane job.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. And so that is going to, this is definitely the lift that you need. So in other words, structurally, in a way, even energetically, try and continue to look for that. It does, it seems to advise you to get that job, the new job. And that in succession to that is when you're going to lift yourself into a higher, at least more optimistic point, not even an energetic viewpoint, but just for yourself, just a better spirit to be able to find, to go out and meet that person. I mean, if you're stuck in a routine, then you're looking at a bit of a wait. But either, even if you are in this job, I believe you'll meet him. Okay, so that is good.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, Penny. Have a good week.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for that reading, Carmen. That was very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a caller from South Carolina. Hello. Who am I speaking with in South Carolina?
Hey, Ariel. How are you?
Ariel, I'm doing well. Thank you for calling in tonight. How can I help you?
Great. I'm actually calling to find out. I pushed my boyfriend, for about almost 9 years in February, and I'm still waiting. I mean, every woman wants to get married and have kids, and I'm trying to find out when is it going to happen.
Okay.
Or is it going to happen soon?
All right. Let's see here. 1 second while I pick up on your overall situation. Okay, Ariel?
Sure.
Okay, what I see here is that the fault lies in your ability. You don't have any ability with this guy. Trump number 21 is Major Arcanum card number 21 refers to the entire situation. And it's a card, it's a glyph, a symbol of skill and ability, and it's upside down. So the problem is that you're not really going at your partner successfully here. What you've done is established a status quo. You know what I'm saying? And so there's no point for him to marry you because he knows he can just get away with putting it off forever and ever and ever, and that you're going to be pretty happy about that. What you're going to have to do, I'm not sure if you heard the interview tonight, but at one point we started talking about tough love, and this is really what's recommended for you, Ariel. What you want to do is start showing your partner a reduced amount of enthusiasm. Do you see what I'm saying? This is going to arouse his chase instincts. What you want to do is sort of adopt the attitude of, I don't care if we get married or not. In fact, I'm thinking about replacing your butt. How do you feel about that? You see?
Yeah.
That's going to take some courage to do that. But if you do, I feel like you're guaranteed a good result, because you're not going to get married at the rate you're going. I hate to be ugly or a negative Nelly, but there's just no incentive for your partner to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, what you don't want to do is start getting accusatory. You don't want to start saying, I've been waiting on, you know, I've been doing, you know, you don't want to make him feel bad or say, you know, you don't want to start complaining about specific things, specific faults in the relationship. What you want to start doing is just start working on your eagerness over the idea of being with him and being married. You want to start putting that down. You want to start dampening that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's ready for a baby, and I'm like, you really can't do it backwards. Really, are you really wanting to do it backwards? So that's kind of where it faults there.
Absolutely. You know, if he wants, you have to sort of draw a line in the sand here and let him know what you want, and then start showing extreme dissatisfaction and lack of interest in him when he starts showing that he's not going to give you what you want. 9 years is a long time, and you're not getting any result out of this. You know what I mean, Ariel?
I understand.
So just try that. I'm not saying to punch the guy in the nose and say a dirty word about his mother or anything like that. I'm not saying attack the guy, but just don't be eager about him anymore. You start going out with your girlfriends some. Start getting dressed up. Start, you know what I'm saying? Start. You, technically, according to the law, you're still single. So start acting like it a little bit. You know what I'm saying, don't you, Ariel?
I know what you're saying, yes.
Yes, ma'am. And once you do that, you'll start getting much more action in the direction that you want to go in, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Ariel, I wish you all the best on this one. I hope you'll come visit us at psychicaccess.com. If you've never registered before, you get a free 6-minute reading, okay?
You know what? I had a problem trying to register, but I'm trying to do it again. I sent some feedback to help and didn't get any response, so.
Well, if you have any problems, shoot an email out to customer service, and we'll get you squared away. Okay, Ariel?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Have a lovely weekend.
You too.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, Steve, you have a caller from New York.
Thank you. Who's calling from New York?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Anne.
Hello, Anne. How can I help you?
Hi, yes. So a friend of mine, whose name is also Anne, on Tuesday she called me to ask if I can pick up her younger daughter from school and the next day. And I kind of waver. I was wavering about it because it's in a location I don't know too well, so I didn't want to be lost and responsible for a small child when I'm lost. And I'm not sure if she perceived that or not. She never actually told me how to get there. And she said she'd call back, and she never did. So I just want to make sure she's not upset with me.
Oh, so she asked you, but then it didn't go ahead.
Well, she asked me, and I started asking her questions, and she said, well, I'll call you when I get home to sort of, I guess, discuss it further, and she never called me.
Okay. Well, I feel that something occurred that prevented her from calling. I don't feel that she decided that she was not going to bother following up with you. I feel that something occurred that got in the way. And you know, when I tune into her, I feel that what occurred was quite challenging. So I feel that she's been sidetracked in effect by an event. And I mean, I don't want to go too deeply into what's occurring in her life at the moment, but there are some challenges, and particularly there was an event yesterday that has distracted her. So I don't want to be indiscreet and reveal everything that's going on in her life, but I wouldn't take it personally. I just feel that she's distracted by what's occurred. And if I look at how best you can handle this, yeah, I feel like you should just reach out to her. I feel like you should just contact her and say, hey, I wanted to just follow up with you. I'm more than happy to collect your daughter if necessary in future. I was a little unsure of the location, etc., but I didn't hear back from you. I just wanted to make sure everything's okay. So it feels as simple as that, but I feel that she'll be grateful that you do reach out to her, actually, because I feel like she does need some support. And I'm not referring to collecting her daughter. I just mean emotionally she needs some support from a friend. Okay?
Yeah, I actually did call her and left her messages, and then I got her, and she said she couldn't talk. And I actually left messages saying, you know, you didn't call me. I want to make sure that, you know, you were okay with the situation. So I did do that.
Okay, you've done that. Well, I'm sure you'll hear from her, and maybe you can call her the beginning of next week. I feel as though there's quite a situation unfolding for her in her personal life. And so she, when she said she wasn't able to talk, I feel comfortable that she really wasn't able to talk at that moment.
Okay.
All right. But if you okay. think of it logically, you've done nothing wrong. You offered to help her out and she hasn't followed up, and that's the way it is. I wouldn't be okay. worried about it. All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you very much for that, Steve. We really appreciate it. Carmen, you have a caller from Georgia.
Hello, Georgia. Someone from Georgia. Good evening.
Yeah, me. I'm calling from Georgia. How you doing?
Oh, okay. Thanks. What's your name?
Monique.
Oh, hi, Monique. How are you?
Hi. Okay.
Hey. What can I do for you?
I want to focus on my love life. I want to know, this guy, what I mean to the guy. Will he be my soulmate or what?
Well, let me have a look here for you, hon. I know that they all come in different forms. Friends, lovers, yeah. romantic partners, marriage partners, soulmates. Not always all of the above.
Say what now?
Not always, you know, yeah, you know, I'm saying that, you know, that men come in all shapes and sizes, and this one is coming in as a committed partner. So when you do meet somebody, because I think we spoke about this once before, and I think I remember seeing this, and it comes onto your last reading, which is nice. It's like a nice continuation. It seems to say here, this man will want a commitment. And so he's going to be kind of which is good, but he's going to be pushy. He's going to push for it right away, which I think is always very confusing for us, because we've been left with the stereotype or the idea that men don't want a commitment. And when they do come in quickly, some of us back out thinking that that was an error or it probably wasn't genuine. But what he's doing is he's coming in as a genuine friend, and he's going to make a proposal. My only concern about him is he's really an intense person. He's gone through an overwhelmingly difficult time, so he's coming out of an emotional difficulty. But you know what? All the more interesting, you know, when you come across people like that. They have some depth, they have experience, he has life experience, probably sensitivity. So my take is that he is going to be not a soulmate, but this next man that you're going to meet is going to be someone that's going to want to marry you. And the difference between that is, I think, a soulmate you can play with.
And well, yeah, yes, will be my soulmate.
Well, I know, I'd love to give you that. Then the next man you meet, you will meet your soulmate, right? But the next man you meet is going to be somebody that's going to propose to you. He may not be the uttermost complimentary soulmate to your spirit. So this means that another male down the line, there's a man coming in here. Let's say you have, like, say, in your lifetime, 2 or 4 relationships left. Man number 2 is your soulmate, the second man. And that's the man that you
This guy will not come in next, not be my soulmate. The next guy after him will be my soulmate. Okay. What you're saying?
Yeah, but don't miss out on that, because I think it's actually really vital to remember that. You know, soulmates, I think, really only enter our lives once every decade, I actually think. And do not cut yourself out of a relationship just because you can't seek that soulmate. You know, your soulmates come in forms of friends, so forth, and you have a certain amount of credit allotted to soulmate time. Like, I just don't think that we all have them in our lives, all of them, at present, at once. So it's possible that you will meet this man will not be completely and utterly what you feel you were born for, but he would probably be a very good mate for you. And so you just have to be very conscious of the differences between that, because people like to bring up soulmates, twin flames, you know, you have all these different terms. And I'm feeling here, more than likely, he is. You just don't recognize it right away. Okay, Nick. So, in a way, it's like, yes, and you are going to have to decide what you're going to do with this man, because this is somebody that is going to probably come in with an agenda to marry you. You know?
The first guy or second guy?
First guy. Second guy, soulmate guy. Yeah.
And the first guy, wouldn't it?
So soulmate guy, yeah, the first guy is going to want to marry you. The second man is going to be, that's the person you're looking for, the person you want to play with, have fun with, the person you connect to. Oftentimes those relationships are so dynamic that the energies don't need to grab onto each other. So you would find possibly that you wouldn't need
to. So the marriage ain't going to last long, so that when the second guy comes along, so you not got some guy to play with or all have fun with.
Have fun with, but you know what? You'll have so much fun you won't need to marry. Isn't that an odd thing to say? You would say that people that would want to marry would be deemed as soulmates, but that's not true, and vice versa. Your soulmate, you might actually have such a great time with him that you guys decide that it's fair the way you guys are existing together. You trust each other enough, you know, and so forth. So I'm thinking here, what are you doing in order to...
The first guy will ask me to marry him.
I'm sorry, pardon me?
So you're saying it's possible the first guy will ask me to marry him too?
He will ask you, yeah. But, I mean, that's like... You shouldn't worry too much about that kind of thing. They all do. I mean, in our... It's like, this man is just going to be very romantic. Initially, he's going to really want to marry you. The second one is going to want to marry you too. Okay, but he's not going to necessarily make a major deal about it. You know what I mean? And he's just going to basically come in, and you're going to fall in love. Yeah, and then that marriage issue may come up later. You know?
Yeah, we're going to date a while. Then when they got a blue, might say just get married or somebody. It's going to be out of the blue or somebody without me knowing.
Yeah, probably without you knowing. And that's the thing about soulmates, that they sneak up on you. You know, you never know when the person you meet is actually going to be a guide for you for life. But we, you know, I would just encourage you to say...
Well, I'd get married, probably get married two times from...
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry too much about the specifics. You know, when you fall in love with someone, you just fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're trying to categorize it too much. And I'm the same way. But
yeah, I just want to know. I'm just curious if how I know what he wants. Like if he don't tell me, so how will I know? If he don't say anything, what should I look for?
Well, it says here it's a little while off, so it's probably not necessarily this year, and that would be the first part of it. The other part of it is this other male is divorced, that both of them are. So I'm thinking here, okay, what do you look out for? He has children, and...
He said, well, now he don't want children.
He has children. No, he has children. But that's kind of vague. I would say specifically, like, character traits and such, you know, you probably want to probably think that... He's coming up as a little younger than you, tiny younger, a year or so. And he may not seem like the kind of guy that settled down. And I think that the main thing you got to realize about this one is, I know you're going to be looking for somebody good, and just, but he might actually just sort of appear like a bit of a partier, and still hasn't grown up quite, and then you're going to fall in love with each other, and then maybe he'll grow up. Neek, I have another caller coming, so it was really a pleasure meeting you, and I'm sure we'll chat again. It's Carmen, right? So thank you, and don't worry too much. It will fall in. It might even come in sooner than this year. I mean, my prediction at the time, but just hang in there. Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you very much, Carmen. We really appreciate that. Okay, I have a caller from Pennsylvania. Hello, Pennsylvania. What's your name?
Deshaun.
How may I help you this evening?
Well, I'm looking for love. I'm looking for no love, I guess. Marriage.
Okay, you're looking to get married.
Yeah.
Let's see what we have here, okay? One second while I pick up on your on your romantic situation here. I wanted to look in to see whether or not you would get married over the next year or so. And unfortunately, I can't confidently say that that's going to happen. So let's try a different approach, shall we? Let's try a different approach. And that just means that the way things are going right now, you see that you probably won't get married within the next 6 months or so. But that's fine. We got a little bit of time. You know, it's best when it comes to marriage, it's best not to rush anyway. Am I right or am I right?
Well, I got to meet somebody first.
Well, absolutely. And well, more importantly, you got to choose the right one, you see.
Well, that's it.
Yes, ma'am. That's going to be, you know, there's a saying, well begun is half done. And so that's what my main focus with you is right now, is just to make sure, you know, just to see whether or not you're going to meet the right one. So let's see. Will she meet the right guy within the next 6 months? Let's see. Okay. Ah, excellent. Good stuff. So even though you won't be getting married in the next 6 months or so, you will, however, meet someone who is very much marriageable, do you see? You will meet someone who will give you a sincere, long-lasting relationship that very well, in fact, probably will lead to the altar. I feel quite confident of this because of Trump number 15 and its association with the planet Saturn. Saturn likes to organize things and give them form. And this is at the very end of the spread. So I feel quite confident in saying that this hypothetical future relationship that you're going to meet, this guy in the next 6-7 months, now this isn't a firm timeline, you know, this isn't magnetic resonance imaging or an MRI machine we're dealing with here. So, you know, there might be a little wiggle room on the time is what I'm saying, okay? But it's, let's just say short-term future, 6-7 months, 8 months, 5 months, something like that. You're going to meet the guy, okay? And that actually is going to lead you to the altar, do you see? So,
okay.
That's a good prognosis for you. That's a good prognosis for you. You just hang in there and be patient.
Well, somebody that I've never met. It's not somebody that I know, rather just a friend or somebody that I knew years ago that I wasn't intimate with at all.
No, ma'am, this is likely to be someone who just comes into your life, you see.
Okay.
I'm inclined to think that this is going to be a new person that you might meet at the grocery store or in a nightclub or at a restaurant or standing in line at Walmart or something of that nature. You know, or it's going to be more than likely someone new. But I can pretty much say with a fair amount of confidence that, you know, by the time you call this time next year, you'll have a much better report. You'll be able to say, Stephen, guess what? I'm engaged. And the date is yada, 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 blase, blase, okay?
Okay.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in, and I hope you'll come visit us at psychicaccess.com. You can get a free 6-minute reading if you register there, okay?
Okay.
All right, well, best of luck to you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I do believe we have another caller. I think it's for Steve from New York, no? Steve,
yes.
You have a caller from New York. Okay.
Thank you. Who's calling from New York?
Hi, my name is Tina. How are you?
Hi, Tina. I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for having your show.
You're welcome.
To know what you get from my amazing boyfriend, Michael, in our relationship.
For you and Michael, let's have a look. Let's see. I get numbers 2 and 3. How long have you been together?
Quite some time. I'm a while.
Okay, let's have a look. Let me see. Tina and Michael. Well, I've got all reversed cards on this one, which is, for me, I mean, we all work differently with tarot. You develop your own system, really, your own understanding of what the cards are saying to you. But I feel as though there's quite a lot of uncertainty in the relationship. I feel actually that the relationship was really good. But I feel that there's really quite a lot of uncertainty at the moment. But I also feel that I feel it's more associated with Michael than you. But I feel financial concerns and career or business concerns in the recent past. So I feel that he's quite down in life. I don't feel that he is sensing that life is working out. It's as though he's pushing water uphill at the moment. And a little like the previous lady that called in, Tina, I feel that you've got to, if you want to make this relationship work, you've got to grab the bull by the horns, as it were. Because, as I said, there's quite a lot of uncertainty in this relationship. Have you talked about your relationship in detail?
Yes, we've talked, but he travels a lot. You're right, he is worried about money in his business right now, so he travels a whole lot.
Right.
So,
but when he's back home, do you feel that you will be able to talk?
Yes, but he's always traveling. So hopefully he'll slow down some in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, because I feel that you do need to sit down and talk through the relationship. I definitely feel that there are issues that need to be addressed. And I feel that if you leave it too long, Tina, the relationship could well be in trouble.
Well, what is he uncertain about? I mean, he's the one traveling.
Well, I feel that he's been just uncertain about his life generally. I don't mean just about you and the relationship. I mean he's just had a lot of uncertainty. That's why I referred to finances and business or career. But I feel that he's feeling quite down at the moment about his lot in life. And I feel that the two of you have got to sit down and really talk about how you want this relationship to be and what you want for the future and discuss how it can be moving forward. Because as I said, I feel, and the cards are saying to me as well, that if you just carry on as you are, the relationship's really going to have problems.
Okay, well, yeah, that's something within himself. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But remember, the insight you get is the outlook based upon current circumstances. So it's saying if things continue as they are now, this is the outlook. But you're quite within your right and your ability to say, okay, I'm not sure. I don't think I want things to go that direction. So I'm going to change now. I'm going to address what's occurring now so that I can change the trajectory of this situation. And I feel that's what you need to do, Tina.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I wish you lots of luck.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much for that reading, Stephen. We definitely appreciate that. Carmen, you have a caller from California.
Ah, lovely. Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Hi, caller. What's your name?
Amber.
Hi, Amber. Nice to meet you.
Hi, nice
what's your question?
You. I was wondering if you could give me some, like, job or career advice. I feel like I'm kind of at some kind of, like, life crossroads, and I don't really know which way to go.
Okay.
I guess in terms of, like, my, like, job or career.
Mm-hmm. What are you studying right now, or what are you getting into?
I'm into a lot of things. Like, I've studied art and design, and I've sort of pursued, like, different directions, and right now like, I don't know, I feel like, I don't know which way to go, you know? Like, I know I have to do something. Like, I feel like I've just been sort of, like, I don't know what the term for it is, just sort of, like, not sure which path to follow, I guess, in a way. It's like, you know, I'm interested in different things and different disciplines, and right now I'm just like, I really feel like I need to focus on something, and I don't know. You know,
we ask for date of birth, but because of privacy reasons, because we're alive, we're not. So I'm assuming you sound young. You know, it helps me, it helps us as astrologers and whatnot, but you sound like you have a young, clear voice. And what I'm seeing from here is a tremendous amount of money that you have invested in study or work. And it is a bit circumspect, you know. You haven't got here. You had a good study. You had a very good foundation. But it does say here that there's a possibility that you need to think about leaving or staying.
Yes.
And
Oh my goodness, you're so right. Yes.
Are you thinking of going? Because there's like a, you've got the Eight of Cups, you got the Fool, and you got the Four of Swords. Those two, those three together seem to indicate some kind of decision making about actually going. That is the predication upon which you make your outcome happen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I don't know. I think it's like locational. Like, I feel like that's where I'm stuck. I'm like, do I want to stay here or do I not want to stay here? And I've just been in this limbo spot for so long, and like, you know, I'm still here. And so I'm like, well, I'm here, you know, so I don't know. And so then I'm like, well, now what? You know? So
you're so lucky you live in the States. You have so many cities to pick from. But but I would say that, you know, even just in terms of your job, you're well situated in California in terms of your career reach, you know. We're looking at terms of here it being very competitive, though in the market they're not necessarily keeping, I don't know what you're looking for, the long-term contracts, but it feels to me like they're cycling through people a lot quicker in that area, so they're not mm-hmm. hanging on to their employees as much. Now, that's where you're going to have to figure out getting into some kind of work where they do have accountability for long-term employees so that you could get a background or some kind of experience that is serious. Because if you are going to be working in a field, you'll be shunted into it. It says here you're not decided yet, and that is what affects your outcome. You know, and I just want you to know that in a way you're at a beautiful precipitous point in your life.
Yes.
And you're going to have to probably make a decision as to which way to go, because there is no outcome with this. I don't believe in firm timelines. I mean, just outcomes. I believe in making the change. And what it says here is like with a big question mark, where do you want to go? And that says, based on that, it says, then success is up to you. It says here, the main issue would be a legal change, possibly, and that would be just officially a move. And it says here, look, right now moving is restricted. Why don't you wait for, say, up to 2 years? Okay?
Wait, could you say that again?
It's just a difficult for you to move right now. It's a little bit restricted. It might be a bit competitive or difficult. It's okay to stay where you are for up to 2 years.
Okay.
You know, that might be, again, on based on this theory of, like, when you come out, it'll be the right time for you. And so I'm thinking, you've got the Hanged Man here. That signifies some sacrifice, but it's also coming up next to the Two of Coins, which is stasis, possibly an exchange in time, but you would probably want to look at the number Two of Coins being 2 years.
Okay.
So, Amber, I've got our next caller, and I want to say, you know what? Call us again. I'm Carmen, and I don't actually know if you're going to get much change within the next couple months, but you're free to check in. There's a lot of very bright people here that will be able to give you also timing outcomes as well.
Okay.
But you're okay. You're okay. It's all about decision making, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amber. Bye.
Yep.
Nice to meet you.
Bye.
Thank you very much for that, Carmen. That was a great reading. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. I believe I have a caller from Illinois. Hello, Illinois. Who am I speaking with?
Christina,
thank you very much for calling in. How can I help you this evening?
I was wanting to talk to Carmen.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's about me and this guy that have been seeing each other off and on. We had a really bad fight on Sunday night, and I had been talking to Carmen off and on about it. And I just basically got all my stuff from his house and left. And everything, well, now it's been 4 days, and he sends me a message, and I replied back, and I wasn't too nice, because I'm not going to be played for a fool. I'm not.
Right.
So now I'm curious where this is going to go.
Okay.
And me and Carmen had been chit-chatting online, so...
Oh, yeah, I totally understand. You know, she understands your quote-unquote case history or whatever. That's quite reasonable. But let's see if I'm going to do my best for you here, okay?
Okay.
All right. And unfortunately, I don't really see anything great happening over the next couple of months. Out of the next
90 days or so, probably the most positive time will be in the early part of 2014. I'm talking about going from late December to late January. For sure, the period going from late November until late December is going to be one that is fraught with conflicts. I see a lot of arguments with this guy coming up over the next, mainly through, like I say, late November to late December. And what I want to caution you about, Christina, is that these are the types of conflicts and arguments that can actually engender some serious dislike, do you see? So knowing this going forward, going into the month, you know, the end of November to the end of December, because I designate this really the danger zone as far as the arguments go, do you see?
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of this month, the next 4 weeks, I don't see anything really jumping out to grab my attention. Sure, there might be some arguments, but there might be, you know, some minor getting back together or anything, but there's not going to be a major breakthrough either way. It's the following set of 4 weeks, a lot of arguments, and they can be quite dangerous arguments too in terms of doing structural damage to the relationship. So, you know, you can reduce the severity of these arguments by being forewarned, talking to me right now. You're armed with new knowledge. But this is very important. What I wanted to point out to you is that in the third set of 4 weeks, we have the Ace of Coins reversed. Okay, now this reversal means that something is about to start, or it's about to end, but I judge this as about to start. Okay, and what this means is that you're going to start a new policy with this gentleman, like a new set of rules. It's almost as if the arguments in late November going into late December, that month of argumentation, that month is going to lead to a sort of a new set of rules of engagement. Do you see what I'm driving at here?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like this huge makeup and, you know, definitively solving the problem with this gentleman, I can't say that's going – I don't see that happening, unfortunately. I see things pretty much deteriorating and getting worse over the next 8 weeks. And if there is any light at the end of the tunnel, it'll be – again, in late December going into the beginning of 2014 and late January, in which you guys sort of reach an agreement or, you know, agree to disagree or agree to whatever. And, you know, I'm not inclined to think that that's, you know, going to be a hugely romantic thing, but it could certainly preserve your relationship with him.
And that's, you know, that's what I'm very curious about, because we haven't talked at all hardly this week. I just got my things. I left. And then he sends me a message today, and I fired back. And I'm just kind of like, I'm very, very up in the air about it at this point. I really am, because now I'm standing my ground, and I don't want to get run over. So it's just kind of like,
Yes, ma'am. I wish I could tell you that that's, you're going to get some relief from that, but you won't, not over the next 8 weeks. There's still going to be arguments. And you know, you should continue to stand your ground. I mean, compromise when possible, you know, obviously in the spirit of being civil, in the spirit of being friendly or whatever, but for obviously for your, you know, your important issues, definitely, you know, you got to hang in there and stand your ground. But it's definitely going to lead to more arguments, and I don't see any relief from that again until the beginning of 2014. I mean, I don't want to sound unrelentingly negative. There are going to be some, you know, there'll probably be some bright spots interspersed between, you know, here and there, but by and large, generally, the atmosphere of that relationship, of your relationship with him, is going to be, you know, fairly contentious and argumentative over the next 8 weeks. But again, there's some relief coming in January. It's almost as if you guys are either going to, you know, it's almost as if you guys come together and say, okay, we need some rules of engagement, rules that you follow, rules that I follow. You know, and I see that happening, really starting to happen in late December to early January. Do you see?
Yeah.
But what I want to prepare you for right now is just sort of batten down the hatches, Christina, okay?
Okay. No, I'm glad you're saying that, because that's what I'm kind of like, because
yes,
I haven't said nothing to him today, and I'm wondering if he's going to say something to me tomorrow, so that's why I'm just kind of very iffy about it. I'm not a convenience for him, neither. I'm not that, and that's not something I'm looking for.
I totally understand. But now you can definitely expect more disagreements from your partner over the next 8 weeks, okay? And then things will start improving after that, okay?
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Christina, I really appreciate you calling in tonight. I hope you'll visit us at psychicaccess.com, register, and get your free 6 minutes, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You can find Carmen there as well. She's familiar with your case, Carmen Miro, on psychicaccess.com. She's there as well, okay?
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Best of luck to you, Christina.
Thank you. Bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, Steve, I do believe you have a caller from Florida.
Thank you. Who's calling from Florida?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
Hello, Stephanie. How can I help?
I hope you can. I want to ask you a quick question. I've been seeing this guy. His name is Keith. And I know he doesn't really want a commitment, but I know that we like each other a lot. And I'm wondering if you see something happen, especially that he's in the military and he's supposed to PCS between next month and February. So I might be able to see him again or not.
Okay, let's have a look.
Thank you.
I have to say to you, I don't feel he's available. I rarely say this. I only say this if I feel it strongly, but I would question this whole concern about whether he doesn't want to commit. Mm-hmm. I wonder, or I feel quite strongly, that the issue is more that he's not available.
Okay.
How long have you known him?
Well, I know him since February, but he remembered me from 10 years ago when he was stationed in Italy. And he always, you know, I know that he was always attracting to me, but I was engaged back then, so I really didn't pay, you know, no attention.
Okay. And
so basically, six, eight months that I know him.
Is he quite a very practical, down-to-earth man?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really feel that you need to reflect upon this situation. Because there's something does not feel right about this situation. I'm not saying for sure that he's married or he's in a relationship with somebody else, but I really want you to reflect upon this because something doesn't feel right, and I don't feel that this relationship's going to work out for you in the long term. So I feel on the one hand, you need to really think about compatibility and whether you feel he can offer what it is you're looking for. But on the other hand, I feel as though you need to find out more about him and really identify whether he truly is available, because my feeling is that he's not.
Well, according to him, you know, he's divorced since 3 years, but like I say, I don't spend every day with him. I might see him on the weekend, or, you know, he texts me 3-4 times a day. I mean, during the week.
Yeah. Well, I feel that you need to find out more about him. Ask him more about his life, and also at the same time, consider, is he the guy that can offer you what it is you actually want in the longer term? Because, as I said, something doesn't feel right, and I feel that he's with somebody else, in honesty.
Okay.
And if I didn't feel 99% sure of that, I wouldn't say it to you. Mm-hmm. I would be more subtle and diplomatic about it.
Okay.
So I feel you've got to look at the situation more clearly. All right?
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that reading, Steve. We definitely appreciate that. Okay, this brings us to the end of our show. We had a great show this week. We definitely thank Doug. He's always behind the scenes, sort of like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. Keeps us on track as our executive producer, our inspiration and guiding light. Thank you very much, Doug. Warm thank you to my co-hosts, Carmen, Steve. Unfortunately, Maureen couldn't join us tonight, which is what we call in English a bummer, because her show is next week. It's going to be a great show. The title of that is New Dream Work, and her guest is David Dibble. You will not want to miss that. It'll be next Thursday, same bat time, same bat channel. We'd like to thank all of you guys for coming by in the chat room and listening at home, and we hope you have a lovely week. See you next week.
Bye.
Good night, everyone. Bye.
Hello. My name is Res Miranda, If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.